This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump says the U.S. seeks a peaceful transition of power in Venezuela, but all options are open. He spoke in Miami Monday about the months-long political crisis and the dangers of socialism. He pleaded with Venezuela's military to support opposition leader Juan Guaido and said the military and government leaders must ignore any orders from President Nicolas Maduro to block aid or harm citizens.
You cannot hide from the choice that now confronts you. You can choose to accept President Guaido's generous offer of amnesty to live your life in peace with your families and your countrymen. President Guaido does not seek retribution against you, and neither do we.
The Venezuelan military could play a decisive role in the stalemate, but has largely remained loyal to Maduro. In remarks broadcast on state television, Maduro accused the U.S. president of speaking in an almost Nazi style. California and 15 other states filed a lawsuit Monday against President Trump's emergency declaration to fund a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. California Attorney General Xavier Becerra released a statement saying that the suit alleges the Trump administration's actions violate the Constitution. The president says he's trying to stop criminals, gang members, and illicit narcotics from entering the country. Protesters gather there across the country on President's Day to call the declaration undemocratic and anti-immigrant. Egypt's Interior Ministry says that a suicide bomber killed two police officers and wounded three more while it was being pursued near Cairo's famed Khan Khalili tourist marketplace. The Monday night explosion was a rarity for a central area of the capital. A body was seen on the street behind areas cordoned off by dozens of police and soldiers after the explosion. This is VOA News. Germany's foreign minister says that President Trump's demand that European countries take back Islamic State group militants held in Syria is a hard ask. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma explains.
In a weekend tweet, Donald Trump had urged Britain, France and Germany and others to take back and try militants from Syria. Now Germany's Heiko Maas says the project would be extraordinarily difficult to fulfill. He says German nationals have a legally guaranteed right to return, but there's no way at present of checking that in Syria. Maas adds some humanitarian cases, women and children, already have returned, but it would only be possible in other cases if court proceedings can immediately be launched. I'm Charles Ledesma.
Germany's foreign minister says that President Trump's, again, demand that the countries take back the Islamic State group militants held in Syria is a hard risk. Organizers of Pope Francis' summit on preventing clergy sex abuse meeting this week in Rome with a dozen victims at a news conference Monday, and Archbishop Charles Scicluna said that a key aim of the conference is to make sure the clergy are fully aware of their responsibilities ahead.
It's not only a question of coming here for 3 days and learning what you do, but at least having the necessary information that then will keep you going on when you go back to your diocese or your community.
The Catholic Church has long been criticized for its failure to hold bishops accountable when they cover up for priests who raped and molested children. Seven British lawmakers quit the main opposition Labour Party Monday over its approach to Brexit and anti-Semitism, the biggest shakeup in years for one of Britain's major political parties. There's a long simmering rift between socialists and centrists in the party, which sees itself as the representative of Britain's working class. It's also the latest fallout for Britain's decision to leave the European Union, which has split both the Conservatives and Labour parties into pro-Brexit and pro-EU camps. The kissing sailor in the photo at the Times Square celebration at the end of World War II has died, AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
Officially, the photo was called VJ Day in Times Square, but it came to be known simply as The Kiss. The photo, first published in Life magazine, captured a sailor kissing a woman in a nurse's uniform in Times Square on August 14, 1945, the day Japan surrendered, ending World War II. The sailor was George Mendoza. The nurse was Greta Zimmer Friedman. Mendoza's daughter tells the Providence Journal her father died Sunday at an assisted living facility in Middletown, Rhode Island. He was 95. I'm Mike Rossia.
And British lawmakers issued a scathing report Monday that calls for tougher rules to keep Facebook and other tech firms from intentionally violating data privacy and competition laws. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Music. to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Candidates in Saturday's Nigeria election have been given the green light to resume campaigning.
The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, late Monday decided that it will grant the participating political parties the permission to resume campaigning ahead of Saturday's election.
That's VOA's Peter Clote in Lagos, Nigeria, covering the presidential election. A trial has begun to impeach an associate justice of Liberia's Supreme Court. A radio station critical of the George Weah government has been evicted from its transmitter site. And Zimbabwe's president retires 4 army generals, but is it a purge?
These army generals are in the vice president Chiwengwa's faction, and since the vice president is not in the country, Mnangagwa has decided to retire them.
Nkululeko Sibanda, a spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa, a lawyers group hopes there is the political will to carry out Sierra Leone president's rape emergency and sexual abuse survivors to meet with church officials in Rome. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Candidates in Saturday's Nigeria once-postponed general election have been given the green light to resume campaigning. The Independent National Electoral Commission postponed the February 16 election to this Saturday, citing problems in the distribution of ballot papers and results sheets, as well as sabotage after 3 fires at its offices. President Muhammadu Buhari Monday accused the commission of incompetence, warning against any attempts to tamper with the election. VOA's Peter Clote is in Lagos covering the Nigerian presidential election.
The Nigerian Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, late Monday decided that it will grant the participating political parties the permission to resume campaigning ahead of Saturday's election because campaigning ended Thursday last week. That would have allowed a 24-hour grace period with no campaigning before the Saturday election. But because the election was postponed by INEC, the Electoral Commission held an emergency meeting and decided that it will review its processes. So it came out to grant the permission after both the ruling party and the main opposition party kicked against the ban, saying it is not rooted in any legal backing.
I spoke on my program Monday with Rutimi in terms of how the commission came up with the decision to postpone Saturday's vote. I'm wondering, how are Nigerians generally where you are? How are they reacting to this? Some people say that this may have an impact on the turnout for Saturday, or this might cost the country a lot of money to get back to Saturday's vote. What are they saying there?
There are 2 things. A lot of Nigerians are frustrated. And the latest development, too, is that the postponement of the election is expected to cost the Nigerian economy $1.5 billion for this postponement. Now, thirdly, a lot of Nigerians traveled back to their hometown where they registered to vote. Some of them took their families, and they are angry that INEC decided to postpone the election nearly 6 hours before the election. And they were saying that INEC should have known that it was having logistical challenges, as cited by Professor Mahmoud Yakubu, the chairman of the Independent National Electoral Commission. He knew there were problems. Executives and commissioners of the Electoral Commission knew there were problems. Why didn't they anticipate to postpone so people wouldn't have spent their money to go back to their hometown to go and vote, only to be told? Now, some polling agents went to the polling station early in the morning. I saw some of them. I spoke with some of them, only to be told at the polling station that the election has been canceled. They didn't know because the announcement was made at 2:45 a.m. And that is the confusion at the moment.
Peter, I know that both President Muhammadu Buhari and his challenger, Atiku Abubakar, the former vice president, have both welcomed the delay. But the president, as of late Monday, was questioning the decision by INEC to delay the vote, saying that he's going to launch an investigation into the INEC's decision to delay.
Yeah, he was not pleased with the decision to postpone the election, and he said an investigation has to be carried out to find out who was complicit, whose fault it was for the election to be postponed. He said Nigerians should not be taken for granted, and that the explanation given by INEC as to logistical challenges for which it based its postponement on as not enough. And they said there was incompetence. That's what the president said. There was incompetence in the way the INEC decided to go about postponing the election, James.
Peter, thank you very much again. We look forward to speaking with you again.
You're welcome, James.
That's VOA's Peter Clotier in Lagos covering Nigeria's presidential election. The long-awaited impeachment trial of Associate Liberia Supreme Court's Chief Justice Kabinet Jane got underway Monday in Monrovia. Justice Jane is facing trial by the Liberian Senate after the House of Representatives approved a bill of impeachment last October. He is accused of acts inimical to his duties, Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, and abuse of power. But first, defense lawyers are requesting the recusal of Supreme Court Chief Justice Francis Kopoi for conflict of interest. Moses Gazio will report from Monrovia.
The Constitution is Article 90 says when you are in conflict. Two, you are conflicted, Your Honor. You are on record in the constant case to sign an opinion. And three is to see the sanctuary.
That was Arthur Johnson, the lead defense lawyer for accused Associate Justice Kabinet Janet, explaining why Chief Justice Francis Koko cannot preside over the proceedings in this landmark impeachment trial. He said Chief Justice Koko is a party to the trial after being cited in one of the indictment counts and for being a part of the decision taken by the full bench of the Supreme Court.
You are also conflicted because the decision taken by the Supreme Court is being questioned by the same managers who are saying that that decision that the court took in the constant case, Justice Janet, had manipulated the bank.
Counselor Johnson cited Article 90B of the Liberian Constitution of 1986 to make his case. The article states that no person holding public office shall demand and receive any other gratitudes, a monument, or benefit directly or indirectly on account of any duty required by the government. Additionally, Johnson said the Chief Justice could be a possible witness if the need arises and cannot do same when presiding over the matter.
We can subpoena the Chief Justice and all associate justices of the Supreme Court that signed this ruling to testify if we are proceeding the impeachment proceeding, they will be conflicted. Because we can call you to testify that you were not manipulated by Justice Janet.
On the other hand, prosecuting lawyers have rejected the court for the recusal of Chief Justice Koko, calling it a treasonous act if the Chief Justice were to be made to recuse himself. Serena C. Force is one of the prosecuting lawyers for the House of Representatives.
There's nowhere in Article 43 where the functions duly assigned to you should be referred to another party. That would amount to treason. Were you to do that and form the basis for an impeachment against you?
He said the Chief Justice was working by the way and pleasure of the Senate through its Standing Rule 63, which sets the basis for the impeachment trial.
This is a legislative impeachment proceeding at the Honorable Liberian Senate. So you are sitting as presiding officer. You want to refer to, you are sitting as Chief Justice over a judicial proceeding. There are two separate and distinct parts.
Following legal arguments, the Chief Justice reserved ruling in the recusal motion for today, Tuesday afternoon. The ruling will determine whether the impeachment trial of Associate Justice Kabinet Janet will go ahead or it will face a setback if the Chief Justice refuses to recuse himself. If the impeachment is allowed to proceed, it will be the first since the nation declared independence in 1847. Associate Justice Janet is accused of alleged official misconduct, abuse of public office, wanton abuse of judicial discretion for private gains, misuse of power, and fraud and corruption. He has since denied the allegation. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 19th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. In Liberia, a radio station critical of the George Weah government has been evicted from its transmitter site. Roots FM, owned and operated by political commentator Henry Costa, had been operating from the facilities of Lone Star Cell MTN for about 5 years. But yesterday, Monday, the company told Costa that it could no longer allow the station to use its tower to broadcast. Costa says the company was pressured by the Liberian government to evict his station. Liberian Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says the government of President George Weah will continue to uphold freedom of speech and freedom of political dissent. But Nnamdi says freedom of speech does not give anyone the right to threaten violence or spew hate messages. Costa tells me he will be back on the air very soon.
I'm extremely down because what has happened, Mr. Bote, has never happened in the 5 years that I have been occupying the Lone Star Cell site where I've had my transmitter, and they've been providing me electricity in exchange for running their ads on my radio. I was also piggybacking on their tower, which is where I had my antenna. The government went and cordoned off the premises where the incident took place, where we were attacked and our equipment stolen. And they prevented Lone Star. They deployed 12 armed men carrying long-range rifles, supposedly to protect a crime scene. There was nothing they could gather from that place at all. But the idea was to shut us down. Lone Star Cell begged them to allow them to refuel the generators. The government said no. They spoke with the Minister of Justice, the Minister of State. They all refused. Until finally yesterday, Mr. Borty, the Minister of Justice, Councillor Frank Mosadei, told the Lone Star Cell folks that in order for us to allow you access back to your own facilities, you have to evict Henry Costa. That's the condition.
Mr. Costa, you mentioned the Minister of Justice, Frank Mosadei. I did reach Frank Mosadei and ask if he would want to come on my show to give me the government side of what's happening. He texted me some statement from Lone Star and then said that Lone Star is a company duly constituted and existing under the laws of Liberia. The company makes its own decisions. In reality, just saying that what happened, the government has nothing to do with it.
Well, sir, I had a very unique relationship with Lone Star, and Lone Star was very clear to me. Mr. Costa, we have to let you go because the government is not happy that you are yet. That's it. And, sir, Mr. Borte, I have been at this site for 5 years, Mr. Borte. Never once did Lone Star tell me to leave until recently. Lone Star came to me and said, hey, we've been asked to evict you. And upon our decision to evict you, we will be allowed access. That was the deal. So Lone Star was forced to throw me under the bus, Mr. Borte, because the government felt as long as Costa doesn't have a place to erect his antenna and to put his transmitter on, Costa cannot be on. That was their thinking. And it's true. I've been off the air, Mr. Borte, but I'm coming back. In a few days, I'll be back on the air.
The government claims you're critical of the government. Do you think this might impact what you do from here?
No, sir. It should not. I've been doing this for years now, Mr. Borte. I've been living in the States and studying here for years and doing my work. And yes, I've had some challenges there. I did have some with the previous government, and I'm already beginning to have some now with this one. So I'm going to continue to stay the course, be a voice, be as fair and as objective as I can be. The reason that the government is so angry with me and would like to see me shut down, I've exposed some of the biggest, shadiest deals that they've recently done.
Mr. Costa, thank you always for speaking with us.
Thank you very much, Mr. James Borte. It has been my pleasure and honor. Thank you so much.
That was Liberian political commentator Henry Costa, owner of Roots FM. He spoke with us from the U.S. state of Delaware. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Monday announced the retirement of four army generals. The government said in a statement that the four generals will be reassigned in the country's foreign service. The retirements came as Vice President Constantino Chiwenga is away in India for medical treatment. Attempts to reach Zimbabwe government officials for comment were unsuccessful. Nkululeko Sibanda, spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa, says the so-called retirements are an attempt to purge from the army supporters of Vice President Chiwenga.
Well, he's retired four army generals because they're in the wrong faction within ZANU-PF politics. These army generals are in the Vice President Chiwenga's faction, and since the Vice President is not in the country, Mnangagwa has decided to retire them, even though he doesn't have anywhere to appoint them to. But it's clearly a move to weaken Chiwenga and appoint people who are certainly more sympathetic to him.
In a sense, this is a purge?
It is a purge, but also it is a way to manage the military and to manage the other faction. It's a very, in a very violent system like the one that's dependent on the military that ZANU-PF is running right now. You have a crisis where the military will have to be managed from time to time, and the new guys who come onto the block know that they hold the sway. So it's a dangerous situation. It will not work in the long term. It may be that it simply gets worse from time to time.
So is it true that these former army generals are going to be serving in Zimbabwe's foreign service?
That is the notification that has been given, that they are being reassigned to the foreign ministry where they will be needed. But certainly it is clear that they are being demoted.
I was trying to get the government to speak yesterday about the mine accident, and I was told today that the government has ordered an investigation. What's the latest there?
Well, I don't know what investigation they're looking at because these guys were in an accident, and it doesn't look like anybody brought water into the place. The water came through because a nearby reservoir lost its barrier and sent water gushing down in the direction of the mine. It could be that they're asking whether or not the miners were mining legally and so forth, which is a different story. What is important in this accident is that the ZANU-PF government was unable to rescue people. People were rescuing themselves with bare hands. There were no tools, and there was no assistance coming from the government at all, other than a paltry few $100 that they were saying to be offering, about $200 that they were offering for the burial of those who had died. But certainly, I think the bigger story isn't the investigation. Mnangagwa is so fond of investigations after people have died. I think it should learn for once to act before people die.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with me from the capital, Harare. Earlier this month, Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio declared rape and all sexual violence as a national emergency. Fatmata Sori is president of Sierra Leone's Lawyers Association. The group often prosecute cases of sexual violence. Sori says the emergency declaration sends a serious message, but she hopes the political will is there to reduce the number of rape cases in the country.
We also want a situation where there will be access to services for everybody, because we want a nationwide data on this issue. The report we have now is from five rainbow centers that deal primarily with rape and sexual penetration, and the family support unit that deals with all kinds of sexual gender-based violence. So it's all about funding. It's about a lot of other issues that we look at, we have been dealing with as an organization, because we're also looking at a situation where we would have a witness protection program, so more and more victims will come forward to report issues. We also want a situation where there's going to be limited compromise within the communities scattered across the country, so that people will feel free to come forward and nobody will limit them. We want to prevent communal stigmatization.
The horrific case that the press anyway is quoting led to the national emergency of the young girl who was attacked by her uncle. Was this the case that put it over the edge? I mean, what led to this declaration? Because as you well know, this has been a problem for a very long time.
The case is one factor, but then the numbers is another. After the publication of the data collected by the Rainbow Center and the family support unit within the police, it just sparked a reality in the face of everybody else that this is a serious issue to contend with. The figures, it's the story of the little girl and many other people who have come forward to make complaints and report issues of rape and sexual penetration and generally domestic violence. But the public declaration deals primarily and only with issues of sexual penetration and rape.
What do you think the one aspect, or maybe there's more than one, obviously, that people might not get or aren't talking about, like, when it comes to this problem?
It's like the issues that we should look at is that there are multiple facets to the issues that we're facing with the social aspect that we haven't looked at. We haven't there's a health aspect that we haven't looked at to see to assess, first of all, these perpetrators. What are their mindset that causes them to perpetrate these kinds of offenses? We haven't studied that. significantly to put out a report. And all of these issues are issues that you can take forward to the next step when you have data and you have the report. It's a very serious issue, and we think as a group, for instance, my organization, Lawyers, we think even one incident is too many. So even with the reports that we have of over 3,000, approximately 3,000 cases, including rape and sexual penetration, that number is a lot high for a country as Sierra Leone.
That's Fatmata Sori, president of Sierra Leone Lawyers Association. She was speaking with Ricky Stryak from the capital, Freetown. Earlier this month, survivors of sexual abuse by members of the clergy will be meeting the organizing committee of a summit of church leaders on the subject, which will be held at the Vatican this week. Pope Francis, under increasing pressure that more must be done to combat the scourge of clerical sexual abuse, called on some 190 presidents of bishops' conferences from around the world to attend the four-day meeting. Sabina Castofranco has more from Rome.
The Catholic Church's credibility has been at an all-time low due to its failure to provide a proper and convincing response to the continuous reports of clerical sexual abuse. To deal with this crisis, Pope Francis announced he would be holding a four-day summit this February to seriously discuss how to move forward in dealing with the problem. Around a dozen abuse survivors are expected to meet the summit's organizing committee. Peter Isley, a victim of clerical abuse, came to Rome to follow the works of the summit.
If you abuse a child, you have to be removed from the priesthood. If you cover up for abusing a child, you have to be removed from the priesthood. And that's the only thing that's going to turn the corner on this global crisis.
Speaking this week ahead of the opening of the meeting, Chicago Cardinal Blaise Cupich, one of the organizers, said Pope Francis wants to ensure the bishops claim responsibility and children are kept safe.
It is the courage of victims that has helped move forward this very important project and is the motivation of the Holy Father in calling this meeting. He has been quite involved in great detail, disciplining us to make sure that we focus on children in this meeting and making sure as well that we give voice to the voiceless.
Pope Francis urged church leaders attending the summit to meet with victims in their countries before coming to Rome, to understand their pain and trauma. Abuse survivors will not be addressing the summit itself, although they will take part in moments of prayer. Isley said the summit must provide concrete results.
What's important about this summit is finally the acknowledgement that this is a global problem and it lives inside this global system, and the people running that system are, many of them, most of them are going to be over here for 3 days, and they have to deliver. They have to deliver for survivors.
The theme of the Vatican summit is prevention of abuse of minors and vulnerable adults. Speaking Monday about the upcoming gathering, Archbishop Charles Scicluna, the top investigator of sexual abuse cases, said transparency was of utmost importance.
Whether it's criminal or malicious complicity and a code of silence, or whether it's denial, which is trauma in its very primitive state, we need to go away from that.
Scicluna said the dismissal of former U.S. Cardinal Theodore McCarrick from the priesthood last Saturday after having been found guilty of abuses against minors and adults was an important signal to members of the Catholic hierarchy that no one is above the law. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Candidates in Saturday's Nigeria once postponed general election have been given the green light to resume campaigning today, Tuesday. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a good day.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Tuesday on Health Chat, we will discuss measles, as some countries around the world are grappling with the disease. Our guest is Dr. Vincent Sojounou, incident manager with the World Health Organization in Madagascar. for your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.